So very early on in Jesus' ministry, it was very closely associated with boats. Jesus was on the Sea of Galilee, standing on the beach and teaching the people, but the crowds were so great that he needed more space. He said to Simon Peter and James and John, can I get into your boat? And if you put out a little way from the shore, I'll keep teaching the people. That's what they did. The end of that, Jesus said, put out into the deeper water and throw out your nets. We'll catch some fish. They said, well, Jesus, we've been fishing all night. We've caught nothing. But if you say, so they put out into the deeper water and put out their nets. And sure enough, they caught so many fish, they couldn't even get them into the boat. They had to call another boat to assist and help them. Fast forward then, 3 years, and we've been through the cross and Jesus' resurrection. It's now a couple of weeks after Jesus' resurrection. The disciples have already seen him in the upper room, but we come once again to the Sea of Galilee. And at the Sea of Galilee, what are they doing other than fishing? Well, they were fishermen. They went out at night. Peter had said, can't sit around here doing nothing. Let's go fishing. So fishing they went. They fished all night and they caught nothing. Early in the morning, just at the break of dawn, there was a man standing on the beach and he called out to them. He said, haven't you caught anything? Throw your nets on the right side of the boat. They complied and immediately a massive catch of fish, so great that they couldn't load it into the boat. Well, John twigged pretty quickly as to who this actually was. And he leaned across to Peter and said, it is the Lord. And Peter immediately jumped out of the boat. He swam to the shore. And as he swam to the shore, he could see Jesus on the beach. And sure enough, there was Jesus with a fire, hot coals, a fry pan, and some fish in it. There was a loaf of bread and an invitation from Jesus. Come, sit down, have some breakfast. Thank you so much. Well, Jesus offered the disciples their breakfast. They brought the fish in on shore. They'd actually counted them. There were 153 fish, an enormous catch. And the disciples didn't dare ask Jesus, is this really you? Because they knew that it was Jesus. Now, what do we learn from this? We learn, first of all, of course, that Jesus is ahead of the disciples, as he always was, going ahead and preparing the way. And he's gone ahead and prepared the way for us as well. We learn also that Jesus is serving the disciples, as he did on the cross and as he continues to do as he intercedes for us before the Father. And we learn that Jesus is providing for the disciples, for their physical needs, as he's gone ahead of them to do that. But what I love about this interlude in John's Gospel is that it's so very, very down to earth. There is Jesus, he's sitting on the beach. There's no division between the sacred and the secular. There's no church building there. There's no temple. There's not even a table. It's a camp breakfast. It's a picnic. And Jesus is there with them. And what it tells us is that Jesus is there with us in our daily lives, now by his Holy Spirit. It's not just when we're in church. He doesn't need a church. He doesn't need a cathedral. He's there with us day by day. But finally, there's this wonderful assurance. Jesus is risen from the dead. He was giving that assurance to his disciples, and he's giving it to us now via this account written by the Apostle John, who was there and saw it and who was part of it. An assurance that Jesus is indeed risen from the dead. And if you don't have that assurance, friends, go and read John's Gospel. It's just wonderful. It's a terrific adventure. And meet Jesus. Meet the Jesus who's risen from the dead and who has ascended to the throne of heaven and who knows you and is inviting you to get to know him. So here we are with Jesus and the disciples sitting on the beach eating bread and fishes. Now that should actually be reminiscent of something for us. You do remember that when the Israelites were going through the wilderness, God fed them with manna, bread from heaven. And that event, of course, was recollected by Jesus when he fed the disciples in the wilderness, 4,000 and then 5,000 with the loaves and the fishes. And here we are once again, Jesus providing the loaves and the fishes for his disciples. It's all about Jesus' provision. And you would think that with Jesus now raised from the dead, everything would be rosy and everything good, but not for Peter. So my suspicion is Peter was sitting on the beach there, and he might have been uncharacteristically quiet. Why? Because Peter would have known that in the background was his betrayal of Jesus. In the background, there was the knowledge that whereas he had declared, "I will lay down my life for you, Jesus," Jesus had responded, "Really, Peter? Before the cock crows, you will deny me three times." And of course, that's exactly what transpired. Once standing outside of the door of the high priest's house, just to a young girl, "I don't know him." And then inside the courtyard twice, "I tell you, I don't know him. I'm not one of his disciples." Three times Peter had denied Jesus, and immediately the cock crowed. All of that is playing in Peter's head as he sits on the beach with Jesus and the other disciples. Jesus turns to Peter in front of the other disciples and he says, "Peter, do you love me more than these?" And he's speaking about the other disciples. "Do you love me more than these?" Peter says the only thing that he can, "Jesus, you know that I love you." And Jesus gives him a command, "Feed my lambs." And then a second time, Jesus says to Peter, "Peter, do you truly love me? You know that I love you, Lord. Look after my sheep." And a third time, where Peter felt really wounded, "Peter, do you love me? You know all things, Lord. You know that I love you." And Jesus said, "Feed my sheep." Now, the three questions that Jesus asked Peter were very deliberate. Peter was getting the opportunity from Jesus to reaffirm his love. For each of the times that he had denied Jesus, there was the opportunity to reaffirm, "I love you, Jesus, and I want to follow you." And each time Jesus had given him a task. What was he to do? He was to feed Jesus' sheep. And so what it is not just forgiveness. It's actually a reinstatement of Peter as an apostle and as a leader in front of the other disciples. It's a wonderful moment. Peter was, in fact, going to get the opportunity to do exactly what he said he would do. Before Jesus' crucifixion, he has said, "Jesus, I'll lay down my life for you." Jesus was saying to him, "No, you will get the opportunity to lay down your life for me, and we'll find out about that in just a few minutes. But first, I must die for you." And that's the way it had to transpire. So what do we learn? Well, the first thing we learn is something that is so important for all of us. And that is that as long as we love and trust in Jesus, failure is never final. We all make mistakes. We all fail. We all fall short. And Jesus is always there, ready to forgive us and to reinstate us. And Jesus had a task for Peter to do. He was reinstated for that task. And so also we have the good works which Jesus has prepared in advance for us to do. And Jesus is always there willing to forgive us, to reinstate us, and to reappoint us to the task and the work that he has prepared in advance for us to do. And the second thing is that you notice Jesus said, "Feed my sheep." Brothers and sisters, we are Jesus' flock. He is caring for us and looking after us. Years later, Peter was writing to the elders of the church, and he said, "Serve as overseers, not because you must, but because you are willing. And when the chief shepherd appears, we will share together with his glory." And this is still the case today. Brothers and sisters, ultimately, we are Jesus' flock. He is our great shepherd. And yes, he's appointed shepherds to oversee his flock
in this age, but ultimately we belong to him, and this is our great assurance. He is our forgiving and wonderful Lord. Follow him.
Brothers and sisters, I'm standing here at the front of St. John's. It was first constructed way back in 1802. Who could have imagined the future at that time? We don't know the future. We don't know the future for our own lives. But the point of what we're going to read now from the Gospel of John is that Jesus does know our future individually, and he has a pathway mapped out for every one of us. And his command to us is very simple. It's just this: follow me. Jesus' command is, whatever the pathway I have mapped out for you, follow me. Way back in 1802, they couldn't have imagined the wars that would follow and the sacrifices that people would make. Indeed, sacrifices from people who were and were members of St. John's Church. They could not have imagined that one day St. John's would stand in the middle of a square with massive buildings being built all around it. These things were unimaginable at the time, but very much imaginable to Jesus himself, who maps out that future for his church and for us individually. And so now we come to part three of Jesus' resurrection appearances in the Gospel of John in chapter 21, and it has to do with the future for two men, Peter and John. Now, these two men share the same mission. It's Jesus' mission, which he has been given by his Father. So he said to them, as the Father has sent me, so I send you. They share the mission. But the particular pathways that Jesus has mapped out for them is vastly different. And he's about to address those two pathways. And first of all, he speaks to Simon Peter. And in fact, he predicts for Simon, he prophesies for Simon Peter how he is going to die. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went to where you wanted. But when you're old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. And then he said to him, follow me. Just imagine, for the rest of Peter's life, he knew that he was going to be crucified and that his death would glorify Jesus Christ and indeed glorify the Father. So the cost of discipleship for Peter was very high indeed. As they were discussing this, they were walking along the beach. How do we know? Because Peter turned and saw that John was following them. And Peter asked Jesus, well, what about him? It may well have been concern for John, to whom he was very, very close indeed. What was going to happen to John? And Jesus' answer was a little bit surprising. What is it to you if I want him, that is John, to remain until I return? Now, John is very careful to point out that Jesus didn't say that John would remain until Jesus returned. Jesus' point is, Peter, it's up to me. I map out the pathway of your life and John's life. And so John was to live a long life, and indeed that was exactly what happened. He did, and the purpose that Jesus had for John was that he would write quite substantial portions of the New Testament to our very great benefit. Jesus has a plan for Peter, he has a purpose for John, and he has a plan and purpose for each one of us. Indeed, in Ephesians, the Apostle Paul says he has prepared in advance the good works that he has for us to do. So, brothers and sisters, what do we learn from this? We all share in the same mission. It's a mission which is given by Jesus to all his disciples. As the Father has sent me, so I am sending you. And the mission is to proclaim the gospel by which people can find forgiveness. We look around us in this city of Parramatta and people are desperate for the hope of the risen Christ, and they don't even know it. Our mission here at St. John's, in the heart of this wonderful city, is to see people transformed by that hope as they hear the message of the gospel. And we share in that together. But then the pathway through life for each one of us as we follow Jesus is going to be radically different. For some, it will mean missionary service. For others, it will mean staying at home and raising children who are disciples of Jesus Christ. For some, it will mean a conversion early on in the home of Christian parents, people who have known Jesus Christ and can't remember a time where they haven't. For others, perhaps a conversion to Jesus wonderfully late in life, with friends and family wondering what just happened. And for some, it may mean theological college and proclaiming the gospel in a church. This has been my road. But for many, it is going to mean representing Christ in our workplace or at home or wherever we might be. These are the different pathways and many, many more that Jesus maps out for us. And his command in each one of our pathways is simply this: brothers and sisters, follow me, said Jesus. Follow Jesus, whatever the pathway might be for you. This is his commandment.